matter what people say. We got it going on. Who cares about what they think?
You know me, I'm the hottest in the street.
WJMS, this is According to RP.
Turn up the volume, kick back, and get raw with us.
From the latest hip-hop beats, to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back, everyone, for another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I hope you guys had a great weekend. My weekend was actually pretty cool. The weather was not frightful, thank God. Yesterday, I was able to leave my house without wearing tights or stockings, which means spring is literally around the corner. It's in the air. So a lot of females, I'm not the only one, we hate wearing stockings and we hate wearing tights. Like, I hate it. Back in the day when I was more of a spring chicken, I used to be in 30 degrees weather without any tights or stockings. I know, crazy, but that's the life we were living back then. But now, I have to wear the tights and the stockings. You know, my knees are not the same like they used to be. I got to protect my knees. But whenever the weather starts getting better, the first thing to go is the tight. So yesterday I was extremely pleased about the way the weather is going. And I was looking at the forecast for the week ahead. It looks like we're going to be hitting the 60s. And I think there's a day that's going to be in the 70s. So I'm really hoping that this trend continues to get better. And it's not one of those like, psych, we're going to give you a 65 degree day. And then next week is 20 degrees. I'm crossing my fingers and knocking on all sorts of wood, hoping that the weather just gets better because I am ready for the spring. Although, to be fair, winter was actually not that bad this year. I mean, I don't even think it snowed. Like, it flurried a couple of times, but it didn't really snow. There wasn't any snowstorms or anything like that. So I'm still keeping my fingers crossed, though, because I do remember one year it snowed in April. So although I'm happy and I feel like we're on a positive track to summer, I feel like I can't be too cocky or too confident in Mother Nature because she's played us several times in the past. But either way, a highlight of my week, because I don't really share highlights of my week on this particular show, but last night I went to the Celine Dion concert at the Prudential Center. Now, with this whole coronavirus situation, I honestly was debating whether to go or not, only because, you know, my immune system is not always the strongest. And the way that the reports are out here in these streets, like, I was not about to be in an arena with like 8,000 people because somebody in that arena has, I don't know, in my opinion, somebody in that arena might have had the beginnings of the coronavirus. I don't know. I just feel like the way that the media is making us so scared, like if I'm in a very, very crowded space, like in my mind, I'm like, somebody here has the coronavirus. But either way, I went to see Celine Dion. I, along with many other children who grew up in Haitian households, are obsessed with Celine Dion. I mean, I've been obsessed with her since I was probably in middle school. I love Celine Dion. And one of the things I wanted to do was to go to a Celine Dion concert because I'm not really a big, big concert person. I love music, but I'm not too crazy. Like, you're not going to always find me going to a concert. But Celine Dion was a bucket list item for me. And I was able to check it off last night with two of my girls who are also obsessed with Celine Dion. I am actually surprised that I'm able to speak to you guys today because my voice was gone. I was literally screaming at the top of my lungs every song. But it was an amazing experience. And I was like, huh, maybe I should go to more concerts because I actually had a really, really good time. It's been a while since I've been. But that was my highlight. And I had to talk about it because it was definitely an iconic moment in my life to attend in person a Celine Dion concert. So I'm really, really happy that I was able to do that. Either way, today we have a very, very awesome show, a very unique show, I would like to say, for you all. I have a very special guest by the name of Riva Priscille. She's a lot of things, actually. She's a Haitian American recording artist. She is an artist. She is a jeweler. She does a lot of creative things, but she's known for her creativity. But she's going to be on the show today, and she is going to talk about a subject that I've always kind of wanted to really delve deeper in, especially being Haitian American and living in our community. And I know some of you guys might be like, what is going on here? Why are we talking about it? Not going to listen to it. It is what it is. But it's the topic of voodoo. We hear about this all the time in our communities. And especially, again, as Haitian Americans, we have this weird relationship with it. I mean, I follow a lot of the popular Haitian outlets, and there's always some weird discussion where it seems like the community is split with respect to, you know, voodoo worship or even the acknowledgement that it's part of our ancestry. And so I feel like it was time to just talk about it, right? I haven't really seen too many platforms kind of actually address the topic or even invite a practitioner onto the show or interview a practitioner to really get a sense of what exactly is, you know, like voodoo. What is the practice of voodoo? And I thought it was particularly interesting to have a young individual on the show. You know, a lot of times when we hear about the practice of voodoo, we think about some of the older generation, like, you know, our grandparents' generation or even parents' generation. We think about something very remote, people living in the mountainside in Haiti. It's a very weird connection, I would say, that we have with it. But I always find it interesting when I see young people of our generation, you know, coming forth and stating that, you know, I am a voodoo practitioner. It doesn't ring right in a lot of people's ears. And so I like to dissect things. I like to talk about the things that people don't want to talk about. So Riva's going to talk about her being a voodoo practitioner, the practice of voodoo itself, because as you will hear on the show, she doesn't consider it a religion as many other people do. And she's going to talk about her wedding ceremony that took place a couple of years ago. I know many of you guys had tuned in on social media and saw pieces of the wedding. And so she's going to talk about the elements of her wedding and how her wedding actually was not a traditional voodoo wedding ceremony. And I will say, because I am, you know, ignorant to a lot of the you know, the practices and discussions with respect to voodoo, when I had seen her wedding on social media, I was like, oh, is that a voodoo wedding ceremony? Apparently it's not. So even I'm being educated. So either way, I really hope you guys tune in, because I think that the conversation is important, especially again, as us Haitian Americans living in the diaspora. A lot of young Haitian Americans are starting to move toward this spiritualism / you know, voodoo practice. And I think that it is important to talk about it and to really just, whether you accept it or not, this is not a conversation to integrate people or to, you know, ask people to join. I am not a voodoo practitioner, but I am a Black Haitian woman living in America who has had some sort of exposure to this, you know, particular practice, because it's always been said to be part of our culture. So I think it's really important that we just tune in and be very open-minded as to, you know, the different elements of our community and of our ancestry. So definitely tune in for that. But before we get into the meat of the show, you guys know that it's time for our preliminaries. So it is now time for our Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
May I have the definition?
What does skeet skeet mean?
What's on fleek?
Can you use it in a sentence?
I've been on fleek, to lit.
And it's gonna be lit.
Major key.
It's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
So this week's Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week is heebie-jeebies. And so the reason that I chose to share this word of the week is because last week, I think I actually used it in one of my episodes. I think in last week's episode, I used the term heebie-jeebies. And although I feel like most people know what heebie-jeebies mean, as I was scrolling Urban Dictionary, I fell upon heebie-jeebies and I'm like, huh, it must be kismet. I gotta talk about it. So, heebie-jeebies, a feeling of minor fright, anxiety, nervousness, apprehension, the willies, and phobic. Example, that spider crawling on my neck gave me the heebie-jeebies. So it's a very simple term. I don't know. I know it's been around forever. Maybe I'm the only one who uses heebie-jeebies. But apparently, oh, and I'm actually looking at the date this was submitted. This was definitely October 2003. So apparently it seems like in this decade, people are not really using the term heebie-jeebies. But because I've used it, some people might be wondering, what is she saying? Is she, you know, throwing a hex? No, I'm just saying that, you know, something was frightening, something made me nervous, or something made me apprehensive, and so it gave me the heebie-jeebies. I am an avid supporter of anybody who wants to use this term, because I think it gives dimension, it gives depth, right? Sometimes it just, I like being silly, and there are a lot of terms that have real serious meanings, but they sound very silly, and heebie-jeebies is one of them. So that is our Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week. So it is now time for my favorite section of the show. It is now time for the big up of the week. Watch it. Can you feel big up, all of the woman them big up, all of the girl them big up, all of the woman them big up. So this week's big up of the week actually goes to Beatrice Dixon, who is the founder of The Honeypot. Now, I know a lot of you who keep your eyes and ears glued to the streets like I do, came to find out that recently, Beatrice Dixon and her brand, The Honeypot, was under fire, or became under fire, or however the phrase goes, but basically was being criticized and scrutinized by white people, white women in particular, right? And why was that? Well, apparently she has a partnership with Target. Her brand has a partnership with Target. And so Target had this video that they had released. I believe it was during the Black History Month, but it was basically her talking about the company and her partnership with Target and how she basically hopes that this is an inspiration for young Black women, you know, to be able to move forward, I guess, with their ideas and to get supported and to feel supported. Basically, the commercial was really there to uplift Black women who, you know, who may find themselves being entrepreneurs. And it's kind of like, you know, hey, I was able to do it and I was able to get support. So I'm letting you know that it's possible and to follow your dreams and to use this as an example that, you know, you can do what you want to do. And the white women apparently felt like this commercial was very racist because it was, I guess, only meant for Black women, since she specifically mentioned Black girls and Black women in this particular ad. And so, interestingly enough, because, you know, white women are very could be very vicious when they need to be, actually went on to her website and started leaving negative reviews about her product. It was either her website or like the Target site in general. But either way, they were writing negative reviews about her product. And that started to, like, you know, bring it down a little bit. And they were even coming at Target saying, you know, you're supporting these racist remarks and all this other stuff. It was a whole fiasco and a half. However, I always believe in karma, and I always believe that when you are doing the right thing and others are seeking to bring you down for doing the right thing, you're always going to rise. You know, it might not happen immediately, but your credibility, your hard work, your effort, your integrity will come to light, and all the hard work that you put in will come to fruition. And so these petty betties out here who are upset, why? Because they want to be involved in everything. And that's the thing with white women and white people. it's always an issue when they're not included. It's like, you know, this entire society is geared toward white people, right? Black people don't have any real standing in this society. I don't need a textbook to tell me that. Like, we walk out the door as Black people and we know that we feel like we do not belong. Like, we're not included, which is why there's so many efforts to include us in different spaces, right? But either way, it's like with white people, they want everything. And so because they felt like, I guess they were not included, this was not, you know, I guess because she mentioned Black women and that this was aimed and geared toward Black girls. And the thing is that she's not saying that the honeypot brand is only for Black people. But again, as a Black woman and as it was Black History Month, this was a very appropriate ad to uplift us who are in the community trying to do what she's doing. But we find ourselves, you know, sometimes either discouraged and whatnot. This was like an uplifting. I mean, I watched the Target ad and I'll probably try to repost it on the According to RP IG page. I don't understand what the hoopla was. I do not understand what the issue was, aside from the fact that white people are just being white and feeling that they need to be all up in the cookie jar, right? Or in the honey pot. I don't know if that's appropriate, but whatever. Either way. But she's the big up of the week because you know what? All this adversity that took place, all of this drama that took place only benefited her. In fact, according to Beatrice, her sales doubled. So they tried to come at her. They tried to dismantle what she was doing. They tried to throw dirt on her name. What did Birdman say? Well, they tried to take the respect off her name, right? But I mean, the universe, God, karma came around and her sales doubled. And so for me, I find that it's big up worthy because I feel like that definitely affirms her as a business owner, as a Black woman. And I am definitely bigging up the community at large who assisted her in getting these sales, right? Because her sales doubled, not just because of her, but because of us who went out and actually supported her and was like, nah, we're not going to let you fall like this, sis. We're going to help you out. We're going to pick you up. So kudos to you guys too. You know, a round of applause, pat on your back if you were out here buying Honeypot products within the last couple of weeks to help Beatrice, you know, raise her brand. So big up, big up, big up to you. Now, with every high, you guys know that there is a low, unfortunately. Now, this week, there were so many lows this week. There were so many lows. But this low is the one that really caught my attention. Why? Because you all, my brothers and sisters, were flooding my DMs with this same exact post. I had people I went to high school with who were actually Facebook messaging me and tagging me in this particular post. And if you guys haven't seen it, again, refer to the According to RP IG page so you guys are, you know, can be visually on the same level as me. So it looks like, you know, the NYPD boys are back at it again. I mean, when are they not? But this time it was one of those like gut-wrenching, cringeworthy moments where we're watching the police do a Brooklyn stomp down on this young boy. So police footage has gone viral of a young man being arrested in the Canarsie area of Brooklyn when he was swarmed by officers while he screamed for help and repeatedly told them he did not commit a crime. He can be seen asking the officer what crime did he commit as the officer demands him not to move. Shortly thereafter, like literally shortly thereafter, multiple officers rushed over, tackled him to the ground. I was looking to see if any feet were kicking because, again, it really looked like they were giving him the Brooklyn beatdown. Like a mob just coming out and start stomping on somebody. Like, that's what it looked like to me. From the video, you know, from the angle that I was watching, literally, I don't know. It was definitely like maybe 6-7 police officers, all, I think most of them were in plain clothes, and they were literally like all over on top of this guy, or this kid, let me not say guy, this kid who was screaming for help. So now, The press release said the officers observed two males inside the park smoking a lit marijuana cigarette. And as the officers approached the individuals, they fled the location. Upon apprehension, one individual was arrested and the second individual was issued a summons. So obviously this is still going under review, but all of this because two kids were in the park smoking marijuana, right? Marijuana that has been decriminalized, right? And so some of you might be like, oh, well, they ran. Well, running from the cops is not evidence of a crime. It's not. You might want to believe so, but it's not, especially when we're talking about kids, especially in this climate where we know any type of encounter with a cop might lead you 6 feet under in a coffin in a box, right? Any type of encounter, like, you know, a routine traffic stop might be your last day on earth. So I don't think it's unreasonable for kids, especially, we're not even talking about grown ass adults, but for kids to see the boys and to be like, oh, shit. You know what I mean? Like, we're in that climate. Like, this is the state of our community right now. When you see the police officers and your instinct is, I need to run or else they're going to kill me or they're going to pin something on me. I have friends who are cops. I have family members who are cops. So it's, I'm not trying to talk ill so much of the NYPD. And I'm not saying that everybody in the NYPD obviously is malicious and whatever. But unfortunately, we have seen on one or too many occasions that, you know, a lot of these cops out here are just, I don't know. I don't understand what the criteria is, what the process is to become a cop in New York City. But I mean, clearly there needs to be more evaluation done. And again, like, some people might feel like, oh, well, they ran, but running from the cops is not evidence of a crime. Like, that's, I mean, I guess most people maybe wouldn't know that unless you're legally trained, but that's not, that just because you run doesn't mean you did something. Does it lead to suspicion? Maybe. Yeah. But the thing is, in this particular case, they saw what the kids were doing, right? They were smoking a cigarette. It's not like the kids ran out of a building and they're like, oh man, a robbery or a burglary or some type of crime, some type of theft or whatever ensued. They saw the kids smoking, you know, marijuana. And so that was, I mean, I guess that was the crime, right? I didn't look to see if he ended up going to the hospital, if he actually sustained any injuries, but basically they went after him. And in the video, you'll see him actually standing calmly asking, like, you know, what crime did I commit? What crime did I commit? They already knew what the kid was doing. And I think that's what makes it a little more, you know, I don't know, weird for me. Weird is such a light word, but it doesn't sit well with me because you saw what the kid was doing. I mean, it's in the report, right? That's what he was doing, smoking a cigarette. Nobody saw him dealing, like, they saw him just smoking with his friend. And that was what, I guess, deserved a tackle, a drag down. And I'm pretty sure they were yanking his body in all sorts of directions. But at some point, something needs to be done. I mean, I know I say this all the time, and every time I say it, I feel like the following day something worse comes out. But at what point is enough enough, though? I mean, these are our young boys. And I think about my son, who is kind of like me. You know, we don't bow down to people like that. And even if it is authority, like, we tend to stick to our guns. I could totally see my son saying the same thing. I didn't do anything. Why are you touching me? Which is, you know, unfortunately, we have to teach these kids to be a little more, I guess, submissive or whatever the term is. But I can see that happening to a lot of the young boys that I encounter in my daily life, my son. And it's like, is this the treatment he's going to receive from police? Like, he's going to get tackled and possibly stomped on and dragged because of something light or because he asked them to tell him what the crime he committed was? It's crazy. Like, what are we really going to do? Either way, that was a long spiel. A lot to think about, though. A lot to think about, like, the state of our community, the state of, you know, the police in our community. Like, how many more of these videos are we really going to watch? Today's show is going to be a very long show because I've already gone 25 minutes talking about all these things. But with that being said, it is now time for the meat of the show, and I encourage you all to tune in, continue keeping it locked. A lot of information is going to be shared, and I hope you guys enjoy it. All right, everyone, I'm here with my very special guest, Riva Priscille. Riva, say hello.
Hey, bonsoir, bonsoir.
I love giving the name some flair, right?
Obligé, you have to, you know.
You can't just say Priscille.
And saying it the correct way. We
exactly.
have to, restitution of our original, native
of our ancestors. Yes.
So Riva Priscille is right. It's really
Riva
not
Priscille.
Riva Priscille.
Riva Priscille.
It's not that.
Well, I'm really happy to get you here today. I know it's been a lot of work in the making.
I know.
But it's life, right?
Yeah, it's
schedules.
Life. We had quite some phone tagging back and forth, but I think that, bumping into each other in person that
yes.
day recently was confirmation that we had to get in the booth. We had
yes.
to make time for it. Sometimes the universe just, reminds you what needs to be done, a little
pushes you.
Exactly.
Yes. And it's interesting because it's been several years now. I'm looking back at some of my pictures with the event that the Haiti event that I did several years ago. Mm-hmm. I think it was 2016. Mm-hmm. I had the gala and you had you and your group Bohio Music had mm-hmm. performed. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was a little bit before that I came to know who you are. Mm-hmm. But that was the event where I was like, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. I'm so in love with this woman. But your music, I think the first time I heard you and your husband perform, it might have been at the Grand Prospect Hall. There was some sort of, I don't know what Haitian event was going on. I think the interim president.
One of the interim presidents was
of Haiti.
Present.
He came into town and it was this big spectacle at the Grand Prospect.
Yeah.
And I remember they had your group and I was just like, this music, it was so good. And the one funny thing I remember about that night, they were trying to cut you guys off.
Mm-hmm.
But Mamalino was like, this is the tune. I am going to be done when
because,
I'm done.
Because, oftentimes our people are not great. Or not that they're not great at it, but I find that one of our shortcomings is management of time
mm-hmm.
and, sticking to a script and okay, de telle à telle, mais ça n'a pas fait. Here's the run of show. And so things get behind and then the artist has to suffer. And
yeah.
so I think Movolino, in a sense, was rebelling that night and was like, ça c'est problème, pas nous. I'm not done.
It was so funny.
It was a mess. I think it was a really delayed event. And
it was, these big Haitian spectacles. It was I was just like, where am I?
It was a beautiful event, though,
I have to say.
And I had a really great time performing that evening.
Mm-hmm.
What was the president's name?
I don't even know at this point. I'm même songe jamais.
I was like, who are we performing for? They're like, president. I'm like,
I was like, okay. I don't remember his name. I just remember he was very timid.
He was
very
quiet.
Quiet.
He had his wife there with him.
His wife was there too.
Nous songe, président. I don't remember his name.
I don't remember his name either. I really don't remember his name. This is a shame, but I mean, what could you do?
Yeah, it was in 2016, 17.
I feel like it might have, was it before or after 16? Because I remember in 16, I know he was the interim in 16, but I feel like the event might have been a little, maybe it was 16, but a little bit earlier. Only because 16, when I went to Haiti for the Hurricane Matthew,
mm-hmm.
I remember there was campaigning going on for Jovenel Moïse at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm one.
Sip tea. Yeah, I can't remember, but it was one of our interim presidents.
But I remember I was just like the music. So I've always been in love with Racine music since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
My mom is ultra religious.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in a religious household, so she was not into any of that Funny enough, though, she loved revolutionary music. So I grew up on Les Frères Parents and Fais de la Guerre and all of those songs, which always had like an underlying, like the beat and the music was underlying, but it was, I guess, because of the message, my mom was okay with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But my grandmother, who, you know, who's since passed, she was from, like, she was born in like 1918. So she was like, when she was a machan, she was like in, you know, these streets. And she would like give stories and she would sing these little songs like, you know, Nexavoka. And I'm like, I've never heard you sing these songs before, but you would catch her off guard. Like she'd have this nostalgia.
Yeah.
And that's when I remember, I'm like, oh, my grandmother was part of, I guess, that like that Racine, like culture, that movement. And I've always been interested, but being raised in a very strict Christian household, it was kind of like, you know, you never really knew like how to really navigate the two spaces. But I always like the music, like it's in my soul. If I hear it, like it moves me. So that's one thing I really loved about, I love about your music is that it has that like that real roots, that real culture. And so that's why I was like, I have to have Riva.
Yeah, yeah.
She has to play for my event.
Yes, it was a beautiful event. I love that you really prioritize that roots aspect. So, you know, I commend you for doing the work, because it's easier to go with the easier choices.
Of course.
To challenge people and put them in a space where it's sort of like, you know, they have to be confronted with that is good.
Yes. I'm all about confronting.
Yeah.
Just, you have to, right?
Deep breaths.
Yeah. So I really wanted to get you on the show to obviously talk about, you know, you, the music that you're doing, but to also talk about like basically what we're talking about, the culture, the Racine culture, right? The voodoo culture. And it was particularly after your wedding. And the wedding went viral on Instagram. Yeah. Somebody actually sent it to me because I didn't see it yet.
People sent it to me. They're like, get on my gosh. I'm like, oh, wow.
My friend was like, have you seen this, the Riva wedding? I'm like, you mean like my Riva? Like, she was like, yeah, the Riva wedding. Have you seen it? I'm like, no, what are you talking about? So I clicked on and I saw it and I was like, this is very symbolic. Like this, I've never seen a wedding like this in my life, especially somebody within our generation, right? And so I was going through the comments and you know how it is. The comments, there was good, there was bad, there was whoa.
lots of mixed reviews, very which is mixed. Expected from our people.
Of course. But that really kind of got me thinking like, you know, we're in this new generation, right? You know, our parents are our parents. But like we are like the generation now. And I've never really seen like any type of expression with regards to like the voodoo culture. And I've never seen like a wedding ceremony in my life. So it actually opened my eyes to be like, wow, this is like what it looks like. Like this, like I've never seen it. And so it was very intriguing for me. And I as I was looking through the comments, I was just like, there's a lot of misinformation, a lot of, you know, lack of education.
And assumptions.
So I wanted to have you talk about, you know, the voodoo culture, being a young, you know, professional, you know, living and breathing, like, you know, Racine, breathing roots, like not just in your music, but in your everyday, you know, life. And, you know, incorporating something like that into like your wedding, like, you know, just want to really get into like your experience.
It was an amazing experience. I am so fortunate to have a partner who is very much like-minded and supportive and understanding of my vision and what I had in mind. So one main misconception around the wedding is that like that is what a mariage voodoo looks like. And that's not necessarily so, because this is something that we created. This was a creation of ours. So it was unique to us. Because, you know, in voodoo, they have mariage loi, where you are married to a spirit. So there's that. And then I suppose that you could also be married by a mabu or a ungun. You know, they can officiate the wedding for you. But typically they look very much like what we call here like a white wedding, like a traditional wedding. Like a church wedding. That's what it looks like. So I wanted to really, like from top to bottom, the entire event, I wanted to make sure that it was reflective of us as humans, how we move in the world. Like everything, like even the guest list was very difficult because we wanted to keep it intimate, but obviously that's impossible.
Yeah.
Here in Brooklyn. Fanta Voyage.
Of course. Destination.
So that was a challenge. But even being mindful not to invite people who are not like who are not in our immediate environment.
Yeah.
Or who wouldn't understand exactly how to receive that. Mm-hmm. Or people that we haven't seen for years. You know, when you have when you get married, you invite people, you know, that you went to high school with, your middle school teacher, like just your third cousin on your mind. Like, it gets crazy. And people really feel obligated to follow those rules. Mm-hmm. But, and it was difficult because we had a lot of struggles with like who to and not to invite. But we really wanted to, because I wanted to create one U-shaped table. Puno tut chita bo tabla.
Yeah.
Like puno tut numajina, some family style. I wanted to serve them in Kui, but we couldn't get them shipped here in time. Mm-hmm. But the idea was there. We had all Haitian food passed around. You know, we had du riz blanc, du riz collé, jonjon.
Mm-hmm.
And you pass it around like, passez me cuire ça. Like, it was very like...
like family
if
style.
If you didn't know the person sitting next to you, now you do, you know? Because we perform a lot of weddings. And I never... not that I never, but I seldomly and rarely feel like... I don't get the feels when mm-hmm. I go to weddings anymore. Come see, it's so like, okay, reception. Now it's cocktail hour.
Yeah.
I do. Bisous. Like, ni pas senti rien. So I really wanted to make sure. And then also, like, the seating arrangement is also so bizarre. Like, you sit next to people. You don't know. Anyways. So I really took all of those things into account in planning it. And I wanted to do more. But Movilino kind of kept me grounded throughout the process and was like, Sherry, like, maybe that's a bit much, you know? Like, I wanted to have, like, a cuvette d'eau so that when people come in, they have to dip their hands in the water. And like, you know, just, like, little symbolic things that he felt was, like, we wanted to create it so that it was a space, but we didn't want to impose anything on anyone either, you know? So that if you come and it's not necessarily your thing, you can observe and not feel, like, any pressure sort of thing. So... everything, the theme itself, Gede, came from the fact that that's our anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
November 16th is the day that we, you know, officially got together. Sounds so, like, juvenile. Like, that's the day he asked me out.
These things are important.
Yeah, so I wanted to keep the date that we, like, our anniversary date the same as our wedding date.
Okay.
And usually... we have a Fête Gede every year. Movilino used to have Fête Gedes before we met. I was always a part of a Gede. I would be at Ram's Gede annually in Haiti. But like Gede is something that we both love to celebrate before we became a couple. And so when we decided on a date, I asked him, I was like, would it be crazy to have like a Gede-themed wedding?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, it wouldn't. It makes sense because, you know, there's life, there's the afterlife, there's the in-between, there's death, there's you know, fertility, there's birth, all mm-hmm. of that. So what better way to join two people in a union than honoring the ancestors,
yeah.
you know, because that's really what Gede is about those who are not here mm-hmm. with us. But then at that time of year, the veil is particularly thin because c'est le saillot sorti pour you. You know, Peuvian style, you know. So yeah, we had everything family style. We had a gaga there. I wanted to make sure that we had live Haitian music. We had...
I saw the dancers. Like, there was the dancers.
One dancer, Alexandra Jean-Joseph, who I love. I curated the performances with her. I sort of... directed what rhythms she was going to dance. And mm-hmm. she danced Mascaon. She danced Banda, and then she danced Zarien. So Zarien is like the spider dance.
Okay,
so
yeah, that's the one I remember.
we had a few rehearsals, and she got some, you know, costumes made based on some of my inspirations, and it just came together so beautifully. And Wuz Nazila was the singer who sang mm-hmm. For me down when I walked down the aisle, and also very conscious choice to walk down the aisle to this, to a song, to Miloka, which is all of the spirits, you know, because sometimes for the opening, you can salulikba, but I wanted to really honor all of the spirits in that song. Another thing about like the walking down the aisle, like what song to walk down the aisle to, and I've heard so many interesting corny choices.
Oh, gosh.
But I didn't want, I wanted to really like, I wanted the drums to be, you know, putain buta batlem tap mashia. And then I started dancing down the aisle. That was not planned. I didn't, well,
I
we didn't
saw
have a,
you. You were like,
como de lisa, like a rehearsal dinner. We didn't do that. And the day of, I was planning on, you know, just walking. If you say, wim, wim, I'm like, okay,
the music
we're
took
doing
over.
So it was so, it was such a palpable, like divine, experience, you know, taking it bagay here and there because I was the one who planned everything. So I was also in my head a little bit about the execution of some things, but overall the energy was so right, and I'm happy with everyone that was able to be there with us to witness it. Even like down to the favors that we gave our guests. I actually ordered these like flat coffins,
yes.
But I had to like build them. So, you know, like the month before, I'm like with the hot glue gun, like putting together these little coffins, and people are visiting, like, yo, what are you talking about? What is this for Halloween? I'm like, nope. Like, you know, trying to be discreet, but also put them together. And so inside of the coffin box, there was a cigar, which is, you know, something that the kiddies enjoy. It's Papa. Papa Gidi, Baon, Samdi, all of them, they like to smoke cigars. And then we had a small Tabasco bottle because Yonge Me Pima, and had our names with like the date of the wedding. So simply, all these little details. It had also a matchbox that I also got on Etsy that had like the veve for Gun Brigitte. She's one of the Gidi spirits. And on the flip side, it said, or on one side it said Aibobo, and the other side it says again our name with the, I think it was like Brigitte on one side and then Baon Samdi on the other side. So like the cross that looks like the, you know, the burial site. And it had matches, it had a cigar, it had a bottle of Bamako, a small one. And it also had, I believe, I took out the chocolate. I had like chocolate skulls, but Movino was like, you're doing too much. So that was bad when you're sugar, like, just stop, keep it simple. So it was one more item. But anyways, the idea was that I wanted to sort of curate this little, you know, spiritual experience to give people something to take away. I think my mom didn't even get one. Like, they were so, like, people
so
just,
popular.
Like, grabbed them. And then, you know, the Gaga ended up coming with, like, 30 people. Like, it was a lot. They rolled deep. You know, our people play up sootsy. There were a lot. So they all talk about, you know, so it was, but it was that kind of celebration because, you know, in Gede, Gyanpil Desod too. So there was a lot of mayhem. There was a lot of craziness. But one thing that it teaches you is to just flow with it. You just have to adjust and you know, go
just,
through the motions.
Just coast.
Coast, exactly. But it was so beautiful. We had it at Dumbo Loft, so it was a beautiful open space. Very, and we just used that one space. We paneled them off with curtains, so we had like one section for, you know, the kind of like the cocktail hour, and then we had the middle section for when we had the dinner, and the first part was where we had the ceremony where we were officiated. And one of Movelino's closest friends, Marcus Schwartz, he's a percussionist.
Okay.
He officiated the wedding, and then his twin daughters were the flower girls.
Aww.
And they were pouring out bougainvillier, like, you know, very Haitian flower. So just tried to be mindful to bring, you know, all of our culture into that space, because why not? Our culture is so rich, so beautiful, and people don't know enough about it. And we don't try to get the answers. We're just like, nous manger n'est pas de ça, ou ben nous manger. You know, nous pas essayer chercher information pour nous comprendre qui j'en nous capable rester haïtien, you know, in every sense of the word. So,
and I want to actually touch on that because you said that, you know, this is our culture, right? And so in, I don't know if it was comments under under that one, because there's been a lot of, you know, posts that I've seen, you know, throughout like the year, because I feel like people are coming out more with their spirituality. And so I think it might have been either this year, at the end of last year, I think it was the end of last year, where I think there's like Haiti had named like a voodoo priest as one of their cabinet members. It was something like that, that I remember seeing so many posts about like, what is going on here? This is why Haiti will never, you know, prosper. And so when we talk about our culture, the one thing that I've always recognized, even in growing up in a Haitian household, is that this, you know, connection with our ancestors, this is like our Haitian culture. You know, growing up, listening to my grandmother talk about stories, because they're from the south of Haiti, in Barade, where the Wunga live, and, you know, the... They're like, you know, they believe in Medlo, you know, like the mermaids, like they are very into
that's just
that.
Part of
that's just
life.
Yeah, that's just what it is. And they truly, like, with conviction too, like, you know, there is somebody who's flying at night. Like, you can't tell them otherwise.
No.
But this is our culture. And my grandmother was a medicine woman. She made, you know, medicines for all sorts of people. Like, I grew up on leaves, bathing and, you know, fez orange, you know, all this stuff. So this was always part of my culture, but it was, you know, this is what, you know, this is the healing side of it, right? This is the what grandma, you know, does for us. But nothing else was ever mentioned about. You know, I was like, oh, this is being Haitian, taking a bath and leaves and drinking, you know, claire and all this other stuff. But that was that. And, you know, but we were still, but then we were Christian. But there was never a deeper dive as to like the actual spirits and all this other stuff. And so I kind of want to get your take on, you know, when people say, you know, I'm Haitian, but I don't practice voodoo. Voodoo is not part of our culture. It's not part of Haitian culture, and they get very offended. Like, you know, how do you respond to that?
It's a very charged question. And it's like stirring up some stuff. I think that is the problem. That whole like dichotomous way of being, like, I am this, but really I'm this, but like, you know, behind closed doors, like, it makes sense because our ancestors, that's how they had to, that's how they survived, you know, by using these images of the saints,
Catholic,
but then really, you know, practicing what they truly believed in. So I don't fault most of the Haitian people for being that way, but it's like, we're not really truly, honestly, being ourselves if we can't embrace that side of it. I think that the negative aspect of voodoo is present, it's real, fine, but just because you say voodoo doesn't mean that that's what I'm referring to. I mean, as a whole, it's a beautiful practice. It's a way of life. It is something that, just like you said, like, people don't question it. It's just, this is how it is. This is what this is. This is, you know, like, there's no, I don't know.
Yeah, there's no judgment to it. Yeah.
It's natural. It's just like breathing. So I think that there has been more of a wave of people, especially the younger generation, as you said before, who are sort of coming out of the closet, if you will, or embracing it because it seems to be more acceptable. I'm going to credit the internet a little bit for that.
Okay.
Because, you know, you see one person doing it and you're attracted to it, and you've always had something inside you that's, you know, been pulling you towards that, but you didn't know. So, like, I find many people who are just curious, who've always wanted to know, who have so many questions, and that's great. That's great that they're exploring it, that they're diving deeper, and that they're embracing it, because, I mean, it's confusing when you're going to church on Sunday, but then it's not clear. And, you know, the universe responds to you the same energy that you're putting out. If you're confused about what you're projecting, the universe will give you that same, you know, wobbly reaction. So just, you can just be you. Not that everyone has to be like, fully immersed.
Yeah.
But there's no reason why we can't have a conversation about voodoo without someone getting defensive or angry and saying that's not part of Haitian culture. And anytime that someone posts something of mine on a mainstream Haitian page, like the pages that have like the most, you know, the most followers or like the big, not to say the masses, but like the mainstream pages, that's always what the comments say.
Yeah.
Oh, this ain't, oh, you could keep that, sis. Mm-hmm. That ain't me. That ain't, da, 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 da. Like, speak for yourself. That's because you don't really know. You pa konne.
Yeah.
And it's like, you just have to make peace with that because not everyone is ready to face that and to embrace it and to like, really own that.
Yeah.
And I get that because that's not their culture. They weren't raised that way. Maybe they didn't have the opportunity that you had to see their grandmother doing certain things or singing certain songs, because there are certain households, Haitian households, that really, really, really keep things from their children. I don't know how. How do they do it? It's amazing. I'm impressed. I'm like, how could you have so many secrets with the kid in the house?
Yeah. Well, that's how a lot of households, like, they only speak French with their kids and they refuse for them to speak Creole. And I've had some friends, you know, growing up, they're like, it's disrespectful for me to speak Creole to my parents. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's how they're able to maneuver.
They have a secret language, yes. But then they're robbing the child of that sort of, like, that's our birthright to know about these things. There's such a wealth of knowledge out there that's like, you know, most of it is word of mouth. Mm-hmm. It's not really like we have some documentation, but it's all,
it's the storytelling.
And it's storytelling, and there's different information out there. That's why people always ask me, like, oh, can you recommend a great voodoo book? And I'm like, not really, because there's no one book that's going to give you all the answers. The answers are all here.
Yeah.
We have the answers. We know what to do. Yes, there are things to learn, you know, règlement, etc.
Yeah.
But for the most part, if we were to pass these things down, we would all be, you know, fully equipped.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, here we are, you know, figuring it out.
In 2020, right?
Yeah. Figuring it out, you know, unlearning, relearning new things. And it, you know, we adjust. But they are doing us a disservice by not sharing these things. Even just like stories, conte. These are things like we never hear anymore.
Yeah.
But there are so many older, you know, Haitians who live here in the States, in the diaspora, who have all these contes, who aren't like telling, you know, they don't keep up that culture. So it's like you ask someone who's born and raised here, you know, have you ever heard a conte? And they're like, qui ça conte? Qui ça conte? What does that mean? And it's like, mes amis, hey, like that's, we have to start from scratch now with you.
And I think that that's why it's important. And I think it might have been, I don't know if it was last week I was talking on the show, just the importance of, you know, having the storytellers within our generation. Mm-hmm. I think it was last week because I had saw that Edwige Dantika had gotten another accolade.
Yes.
And I love her.
Me too.
And so I was like, you know, we need more like Edwige Dantikas because I learned a lot of stuff from reading her books. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, I learned them, but then I'm like, Tale, I remember when Gun was saying this, or I remember. So it was able to, you know, it allowed me to kind of merge my experiences.
Yeah.
And I feel like we don't have, like, after Edwige, I don't know how, like, who else do we have?
Yeah. I'm sure there are some people doing the work, but as, on that platform,
on that level,
it's going to be, you know, some big shoes to fill.
Yeah.
The same way I feel like, when Viviane Gauthier, who is the great Haitian folkloric dancer, when she passed away a few years ago, I got this like panic. I was like, mes amis, who's going to replace this woman? Who? Like, yes, there are plenty of amazing Haitian dancers, but the way that she, her diligence in keeping things the way that they should be, the tradition, she was very big on that. And people are now, you know, mixing, modernizing. It's like, it's a little Afro, a little folklore, a little this, a little that. Like, the real foundation of folklore, that was the keeper of those gems, you know? And I'm sure there's a school underneath her who will pass it along. But I remember feeling just like, Miss Ami, like, we just lost, like, such a huge, you know, and she was still teaching at that time. So it's a good question. But I wanted to touch on the fact that Edwige, I'm sure, and my mom was reminding me about this the other day, that when she wrote some of those stories, mm-hmm. she got a lot of backlash because the Haitian, not all of the Haitian people, but there is a certain part of the communities that felt, do you think that the international community needs to know our secrets or needs to know yes. that information? Because we want to keep everything sort of like, you know, under mm-hmm. wraps. But there are things that, look, you needed to know as a Haitian woman. Mm-hmm. That you learned from her. It's yeah. not about, I mean, it is also about, you know, the international community because she's, everyone is reading her books, not just Haitians. But I think that the work that she's doing is so important
yeah.
because she's passing on some heavy, you know.
Heavy information, heavy gems. And I think, I do think that it is important, like, for me, whether or not, you know, the family is, you know, practices or not, like you said, it's culture is culture at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. Whether you, you know, decide that, okay, this is what I want to do is one thing. But to be immersed and to have the kids understand, like, listen, this is part of our Haitian culture. You don't mm-hmm. always have to accept. I mean, I was born here in America. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things I don't take, yeah. right? But I'm here and there are certain things that I do take, but I've been exposed mm-hmm. and I could make my decisions. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, there definitely is a lack of understanding when it comes to that because it's just so taboo to talk about. If you even utter, it's like, oh my gosh, sao fe la.
Everyone sort of shifts like a little bit like sa la pale la.
Yeah.
You know, like, or we'll do certain events that that request, you know, more like just traditional songs, not so much spiritual songs. Mm-hmm. And if I sing like, so, you know, it's funny because some of them are acceptable, like the balao edo c'est bon mm-hmm. because it's like light.
Yeah.
But once I go into like Eziliwo kalamo de uze, everyone's like, what is like? Why is she singing this right now? Like, I don't want to feel any kind of way. Like, they don't want to hear any drums.
No.
But why don't you want to hear any drums? Because it is evoking something within you. So let's tap into that.
Basically, I remember. I don't remember what Haitian event I went to, and there was a singer who started singing like more. Of like the Racine songs, uh-huh. and they were just like, "Mes amis, quote mi la," and people literally got up mm-hmm. and they left. They were like, "No,
yeah.
I'm not doing
it's
this."
It's a thing. I remember we did a gig at in Haiti at a bank, like the National Bank,
mm-hmm.
and they were so so serious that and adamant that I not sing any. Music, pavincha de music, loa la. Like, mm-hmm. don't. And because of that, I was like, yo, we gotta do toise, we gotta do c'est bon. Like, just because of that. Mm-hmm. Even in Haiti, like, yeah. it's like that, it's that taboo, it's that crazy. But we did. We ended up performing it. And people enjoyed it. They loved it at the end of the day. But I think everyone, there's like so much fear mm-hmm. around sort of like what that's addressing and what that's tapping into that I think people just don't even want to address it.
Yeah. So I kind of want to know, in terms of your upbringing, were you always raised in the Vodou culture, or was this something that, as you started getting older, you started to adopt on your own?
I will say that I always had like an interest mm-hmm. in that aspect of Haitian culture, and I always say this that my mother, who was a foreigner living in Haiti, was very open-minded and let me sort of immerse myself in certain settings mm-hmm. that maybe a Haitian parent would not have.
Okay.
So I felt like I had an advantage in the sense that, like, I attended certain voodoo ceremonies, or I was at the Olufsen all the time at mm-hmm. And, you know, backstage that y'a jeté rhum, y'a plumé du feu, y'a chanté. So I sort of, I think, grew up just like watching it. And it felt just like you said, like it felt like that was the natural thing to mm-hmm. do. So I was always around that. As I grew up, I think I left Haiti at 16. And I, you know, went to high school. Then I moved to New Orleans for mm-hmm. college. And, you know, the culture there is so different. I feel like I sort of, you know, my journey had many curves.
Mm-hmm.
But when the earthquake happened in 2010, I was called upon to put together like a fundraiser.
Okay.
And all the songs that I wanted to do were traditional Haitian songs, like, you know, in that vein. Mm-hmm. Even though I had been singing jazz a lot those past few years, or I had really been into R&B, but like when it came time, I was like, no, this is the repertoire that mm-hmm. we're gonna focus on. And I put together, you know, a few dances with our rhythms, with the colors. And I think that I've always sort of fallen into that line of work, but it wasn't until I met my husband that I really felt like fully proud to be in that space and to really allow myself to blossom in that way. Because I feel like, again, a little bit confused, like, okay, I'm just going to do a little bit of this, mm-hmm. but I think maybe, you know, the same way people always ask, like, why don't you sing more in English? You could make so much more money. Yes, it's true, but this is my calling. I think mm-hmm. this is what I want to focus on. Although I'm so open-minded and very flexible and willing to do other things, which my husband is always trying to, like, you know,
you gotta
nudge me, like, all right, let's try this. And I'm like, but I feel personally on my spiritual journey or on my path that I have not fully tapped into it as much as I've not exhausted that yet.
Yeah.
You know, like I feel like I'm just starting.
Yeah. And you have a lot of life left
to learn. I have so many ceremonies to go to and experience. Mm-hmm. I have so many songs that I want to hear. I want to know how, you know, I have a lot. So mm-hmm. I'm not ready to just do something other than this line of work. I feel like I really need to find out, you know, why I've been pulled in this direction mm-hmm. for so long and what is the greater, you know, purpose.
So, okay. Mm-hmm. So with respect to, I guess, like a voodoo one-on-one, right? Mm-hmm. If I were to be like, let's do a little voodoo one-on-one. What exactly, because we hear voodoo, we hear voodoon, there's so many different, you know, mm-hmm. names for it. But what exactly does it like mean? Like, what is the actual meaning of the word like voodoo?
Voodoo, well, in respect to your question about all the different mm-hmm. terms, they are all different practices.
Ah, so it's not all the same thing.
Mm-mm.
And I think
voodoo
yeah.
is the Haitian voodoo. Sorry, hello. Is the Haitian voodoo, which you know, our ancestors created with a mixture of the Taino influences mm-hmm. as well as those that, you know, were brought over from Africa.
Yeah.
Taken away from Africa and brought to Haiti. All of the islands have their own individual practices. You know, you have Cuba, they have their own thing. You have, yeah. you know, everywhere.
There's Santeria, yeah.
Ifa. So in New Orleans, you have voodoo. They're all different.
Mm-hmm.
But voodoo, the Haitian voodoo, is specific to us.
Okay.
That's ours. All of the veves, those crystals, are ours.
Okay.
Those are our creations. Those aren't everywhere. People have that. And they're not all, I mean, they all sort of overlap and mm-hmm. there are some similarities across the islands, which makes sense because they came from Africa mm-hmm. and then they got mixed in with different colonizers and then they created, you know. So there are, like, you know, as Julie is it, you know, there's like the Yemaya and the Oshu, like mm-hmm. those all sort of when you won't
put it,
but c'est pas même bagay yo ye. Wait, I'm going around now. voodoo is it's a way of life.
Okay.
It is the natural way of living. Many people call it a religion, but I don't personally prefer that term. It's not a structured, like, I don't really, because then we just fall under the same category.
Yeah.
Like, you know, really.
Yeah. So it's not an organized religion in the sense of that. But like you said, a way of life in terms of the connection with the earth, understanding, like, you know, like the healing properties in the earth, things like that, would you say?
Yes.
Okay.
Nature, water, air, fire, you know, all of the things that we deal with on a daily basis that come from, you know, a higher space. Mm-hmm. And we just tap into that voodoo. It's a way of life, but that comes from the heart.
Yeah.
You know, it's really much simpler than I feel people
make it seem. Yeah,
it is complex. Don't get me wrong, but it's easier and lighter than I think people want to let on.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like something like pouring out water for a spirit. Like it seems like a simple thing. Like we drink water, we pass some on to our ancestors just to acknowledge that they are in our realm. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like simple.
Okay.
You light a candle with the fire. Like, you know, you utter words into the candle. You put your energy into that. It's very easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that complicated. There are complicated aspects to it when mm-hmm. you go deeper and you go into, you know, specific rituals.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. But every day to day, it's just breathing, you know, it's just putting that into your day to day routine, which I feel a lot of Haitians do naturally.
Yeah.
You know, like, un pile moun comme si le débouché en bouteille bamako yo jeté la terre pour qui ça.
That's true.
Like they don't take the first sip, they just drop it on the floor. Like what was that? Like I saw that all the time. I noticed they're just, you mm-hmm. know. And in Benin when we went in January, we met with the king, one of the kings in the region of in Benin. He's like the emperor of Aizu, and he told us when we were eating, he said that before he eats, he drops a little food on the floor mm-hmm. to the ancestors. So like a next level, you know, like it's not just mm-hmm. like the libations, like dijete manje, like something that seems, you know, so small, but mm-hmm. has so much significance, so much symbolism in that. Like you're eating, but you know, you're acknowledging, you know, those who were there before you, who pave the way mm-hmm. for you, who qui ouvre barrière pour so ou juste, you know, ou faire ou connaît que ou là.
I know the food part was always like a big sacrifice because I know growing up I had like he wasn't a blood uncle, I think he was my grandmother's cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom used to be like, oh, m'a pas manger ça non parce que c'est manger loi. So he used to make a whole bunch of food mm-hmm. just as like an offering.
Mm-hmm.
Like it wasn't for anybody to eat. It would be mad food in the house, good smelling food, but it was his offering. Like it was not for us to touch or eat, like it was for the loi.
Yeah.
And I used to hear a lot of that growing up, like a lot of like, oh, they're making that has to manger loi, like you can't eat it, it's not for you.
Yeah.
So I feel like there have always been this kind of, like you said, this kind of like acknowledgement in a sense. But I guess what I really want to get to is why does society in a sense choose to focus on the negatives, right? Because all the things we've talked about so far are beautiful, like, you know, being in touch with nature, healing with nature, right? But everybody really just knows the negatives, like the cutting chicken heads, finding chicken heads in the street, you know, turning people into goats, you know, or just like, you know, sime pud, all these different things, like all these negative things, especially when it comes to like harming one another. Why do you think that whenever you think about voodoo, that's automatically where the mind goes? Why do you think that is?
Oh. I think it's systematic. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's coincidental that it's so demonized. The way that I like to think about it or sort of make sense of that is, like, let's think about the revolution, the Haitian Revolution, the first successful, you know, during that time. As we're told, or we learned, that there was a voodoo ceremony that incited that revolution, that got all of them on the same page and they channeled the same energy, and they overthrew their slave masters. Like, just think, if we just meditate on that just for a second, just how insane that is. So I think, this is just my own personal thought, is that imagine where we would be today if maybe that revolution didn't happen, because then they went on to help other nations. You know, they sort of set the world on fire in a sense, because it's because of Haiti's revolution that we're all,
that we're all free.
Free.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they don't want us to tap into that again. Haiti, look at it right now. Everyone is divided. Everyone is confused.
Yeah.
Many of them are not on the right path.
Mm-hmm.
And think of how many years it would take for us to get to that space again. I don't know if I'm going to see it in my lifetime, because the way that it's looking right now, I can't say that I'm
not confident.
So
at this point.
Confident, exactly. But I'm happy. I see small, like I said, like more pride in that.
Mm-hmm.
Because to channel spirits in the way that they did at that time is not. It's not just like, oh, I'm going to get initiated, and like it's a different level of mental, spiritual, physical work that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the higher ups don't want African Americans or Afro descendants or Haitians to know their power in that way. I don't think they want us to. They don't want that.
Because they're afraid, right?
Because they're afraid because they know all these things. Look at the symbols that are on the money. Like, they know all about, like, all of these. I mean, not to say that voodoo is on the money, but I'm saying, like, the fact that they use the pyramids, like, all of these things. And then when someone starts talking about these things, it's like, mm-hmm. But of course not. And I think that, you know, a lot of them are Freemasons. They have all of these. They have the information. They know what's up. Mm-hmm. So it's like, of course, you know, divide and conquer. Let's divide these brothers and sisters up. Let's give them, you know, this religion, that religion, to distract them from where they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we were all, my sister always uses this term, en même temps.
Mm-hmm.
If we're all doing the same thing, channeling the same frequency at the same time, just think how powerful we could be.
Yeah.
And that's not what they want, you know? So I feel like that's why in Hollywood it's demonized and it looks so crazy and like out of whack. Like, that's why they plant all of these negative images and all of these horrible concepts that have some truth to them, like a small percentage, mm-hmm. but for the most part are incorrect.
Yeah.
They're wrong. The things that they show you, like, what was that show on American Horror Story? It was like Papa Ligba. Like, how fréquent. That's, first of all, that's not Papa Ligba. It was like a completely different deity. Like, they did no research. They didn't care. It was just like, let's make this guy look as crazy as we possibly can and as evil and as scary and just say that's Papa. Like, no.
Well, I don't know if you remember the PJs, that cartoon growing up, and they had the PJs. Haitian voodoo lady who had a Jamaican accent.
Mm-hmm.
I was
still,
just like,
to this day, I don't understand how we're in 2020 and still in Hollywood they can't get like the Haitian accent together.
Yeah.
Why do they sound like Jamaicans? And Mofley Noah was saying that recently because we were watching Sabrina, you know, the chilling adventures of Sabrina on Netflix. I love that show, but mind you, because anything that, you know, it has to do with spirituality and different, of course, it has a lot of inaccuracies and there's like of a course. Whole movement against it, but I love shows like that. I was like, m'pas comprenne, pour qui ça? Why does she sound crazy? Because there's a mambo in like the very end of the season. And I'm like, and she's saying certain things like metet, and she's using certain words, but one of the words was like completely mispronounced. And I'm like, where are the Haitians in Hollywood to make these corrections? But then, of course, the Haitians in Hollywood probably don't even know for themselves.
They
don't care to give the proper information because that's not really what the point is. You know, so it makes me very sad and upset. But I think that, again, it's just systematic. It's a way for, you know, to distract us from our power.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you think it's possible, since we talked about voodoo being more so like a way of life, do you think it's possible then for somebody to be a Christian and still say, you know what, but I also believe in voodoo?
No.
No.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
I think that that exists a lot, mostly, but I don't think that that's the way, because that is, again, confusing. You know, the Bible, all of that, it can't, I mean, I have respect for people who choose that route because I'm happy that they're also taking on that aspect of their culture. But I feel that to fully immerse yourself in that energy, you have to reject the concept of Christianity entirely.
Okay.
I used to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
I danced between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because I was in college in Louisiana and I was very, you know, I went to church, I got into Baptist church, the songs were moving, I loved the feeling of the water on my head, you know, I got baptized when I was 19 years old, 20, because I was hearing a song and I was just so moved, and it felt familiar, you know, because, you know, what do they call the songs?
The hymns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They feel so familiar. They feel like home.
Mm-hmm.
But, once I kind of left Louisiana and, started, researching further and going deeper, I realized like it kind of doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of confusing myself and confusing my guides. Like, who am I, you know? But it's so fascinating because, you know, most Haitians, they know the Bible front to back.
Yeah.
And they do, you know, they know all of the ways. I don't know. It's confusing to me.
It is very interesting. It's interesting when you look at it, because it's funny again, like just growing up and listening, it's, you know, they're very, very convicted in their religion, mm-hmm. but they 100% believe in the fact that there's, you know, the Wunga that lives down the block.
Of course.
Or the Lugawu.
And when you're really sick, you know that you have to take her, you know, Nakai, Aduya, or not her, you take that child or that person to go see someone who can tap into that. It's just like, it's very interesting. Almost, because it's like, okay, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday and Saturday, we're going to do this. But then on Sunday, we're going to do, like, mm-hmm. it's just not, it's not honest, I don't mm-hmm. think. And again, I feel that I understand where people come from mm-hmm. and why they're that way. And it's just centuries, generations of this sort mm-hmm. of like duality.
Mm-hmm.
But because that's what we know. But I think that it takes courage. It takes strength to just, you know, throw that away, because that was something that was implanted and given to us mm-hmm. for a certain purpose. Because, you know, during slavery, the Bible was used very systematically as well, mm-hmm. you know, like you have to do good, you have to da, 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 da. Like if you don't listen to your slave master, you'll be beaten, and God will, like, all of bagayo mélangé. Mm-hmm. So if we completely rid ourselves of that and, you know, take back our power by really, you know, tapping back into our ancestors, those who freed us to begin with,
mm-hmm.
those who gave us, you know, what we, the gifts that we have now.
It's one or the other. It cannot be both.
I don't think so.
Can't be lukewarm, right? Can't have one foot in, one foot out.
No, I mean, it's beautiful to appreciate and apply different things, because mm-hmm. I like crystals, for example. We don't use those in voodoo, but I love crystals. I think they're beautiful. I like to keep them in my space.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess in the same sense, it could be a little bit contradictory, because I'm using different things, mm-hmm. but I'm not praying to God,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's not part of my practice. Does that make sense?
No, it doesn't make sense. I think, because the reason I asked it, because I feel like there are a lot of people who are curious, right? They're very curious, mm-hmm. but they have strong convictions mm-hmm. in being a Christian. Like, mm-hmm. you know, this is my belief, not just because, you know, it was fed to them, but like they've lived their life and this is their experience and this is what they want to believe.
Mm-hmm.
However, because they are also proud Haitians mm-hmm. and they acknowledge that there is some sort of connection with ancestors,
mm-hmm.
they want to also kind of acknowledge mm-hmm. like the roots and the culture, but not practice,
mm-hmm.
you know, not actually become like a voodoo practitioner,
mm-hmm.
but they kind of want, like, so I guess the question is whether or not, I mean, well, you answered the question, but I mm-hmm. think the idea is, can I still be a Christian, but still appreciate, you know, my culture, you know, with it and the ancestors and mm-hmm. really like kind of like almost having one foot in, but not really.
Yeah, well, I think that yes,
mm-hmm.
you can, or anyone can. That's a personal choice. And I feel that those people, because there are many that way,
mm-hmm.
who I feel are exactly what you just described, especially in the diaspora.
Yeah.
I think that I would prefer that group of people over someone who completely rejects voodoo. You mm-hmm. know, like, I feel that those people that you're describing are supporters in a sense, or enablers of the, you know, of the spiritual work that mm-hmm. they've done, even if they're not practicing, but someone who, you know, wears a veve on their bag because they just think it's beautiful and it's part of their culture. Like, that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Even if you are a Christian and you do, you know, follow that or mm-hmm. believe in that, I think that those people are somewhat also our soldiers mm-hmm. because they acknowledge it and respect it and embrace it mm-hmm. slightly.
Yes. To a degree,
but
right?
But I think ideally it would be to again, like I said, like, you know, eradicate that part of ourselves because it's sort of just like a, you know, lesser evil. Like, what is it? What is the expression?
The lesser of two evils?
Yeah, the lesser of two evils. Because you're still engaging in the, I hate to say, like, in that Western, mm-hmm. Western way of life.
Yeah.
It's not really ours.
Okay.
Is what I think. But I do appreciate and love because, you know, those are the people, that's my audience, really. Yeah. Mostly.
Yeah.
People who appreciate and love the culture, but that doesn't mean that that's what they are really into 100%. But those are the people who I'm making Veve earrings for. And,
yeah.
You know, and they're listening to my music. So I think, like I said, like those are our supporters, our soldiers. Mm-hmm. They're part of the fight as well.
Now, where do you see voodoo culture in the United States going in the next couple of years? As we're starting to see, people are more and more curious. And I think people they're not afraid to inquire, mm-hmm. I think is what it is. Like, we're in a generation now where people, like, we're a little less fearful of our mm-hmm. parents.
Yeah,
you know, so we're a little like less fearful and we're kind of like, all right, I mm-hmm. can, you know, I don't really care what everybody else says. Mm-hmm. Now I'm an adult. I want to do this. Mm-hmm. Where do you see like the trends going in the next couple of years? Do you find that voodoo culture will be much more expansive, I guess, within our communities here in the U.S.?
I think so. I see an influx mm-hmm. in interest, in appreciation, especially in the non-Haitian communities. Mm-hmm. You know, like people are more and more intrigued and interested in our colorful selves, you know? So I think that it's doing well. It's on the up and up, I feel. There are plenty of galleries and museums that have exhibits about our you know, the voodoo flags. Mm-hmm. There was just recently an installation an artist did like a gala exhibit.
Okay.
And he had a potomitan in the center of their gallery. Mm. And I thought that was so powerful because, you know, raga comes from the celebration that leads up to carnival mm-hmm. for and Lent and all of that. You know, like that whole calendar is all mixed up and confusing. But I loved that he brought, like, the essence of voodoo in that space, mm-hmm. even if someone just walks by it and is like, you know, just unassuming, doesn't really know what that symbolizes and that that's like the totem pole in the center in a temple. But it was very colorful and it was very, I just thought like, also there was like a fashion show a couple of years ago that had like Veves, that's Toafe.
Atsimo. I met him.
I loved that they had, but, you know, there's always backlash about those types of collaborations because it was a white designer. But look, it was a mainstream fashion show during Fashion Week. So, like, get with it. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes we don't want to collaborate or acknowledge, like, people who are of different descent. Mm-hmm. But sometimes they're the ones who have...
are pushing the cause.
The plug. Yeah. Or they have the connection. Or they have the funds. Or they have a way to bring what we are offering on a higher platform. Mm-hmm. So I'm here for it, you know? It's kind of like, you know, a sensitive topic.
Yeah.
But I applaud, you know, that he took our veves to that level.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's getting bigger. There's definitely more people who are interested in it and yeah. more celebrating in it. And it's almost like if Haitians aren't going to get with it, then the international community will take it over for us, which is already sort of happening on a
I think
small
so,
scale,
yeah.
but it's just going to continue to be that way because... Parce que yo plus comprendre peut-être ou bien yo ouais qui ça comme si yo ouais que nous gon bagay qui vraiment est important là kay nou and they acknowledge it.
That's usually how it goes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, always.
Unfortunately,
it's just a recurring cycle.
Now I see your tattoo, Ayi Bobo, mm-hmm. and so I know a lot of people they've heard it, mm-hmm. but they're just like. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. And it's funny because in my family chat group, a couple of months ago, one of my uncles who used to be like a priest, but then like left the priesthood, mm-hmm. and he put in the chat group randomly, Ayi Bobo, and I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, what? I've never heard you say that before. Yeah. What's happening here? But a lot of people don't know what that means, mm-hmm. like, or like what it is. Could you just briefly like explain like what does that, like when somebody says that, what does that mean? Like, mm-hmm. who is that? What is that?
Well, Ayi Bobo is a term. It's not a spirit or an energy. Mm-hmm. It is a term that is used sort of like as an affirmation or a blessing, mm-hmm. not to compare it to Western religions, but like the same way you say amen, mm-hmm. or hallelujah, in that same sense you say Ayi Bobo, mm-hmm. in Vodou. So like when we sneeze in our household, we say Ayi Bobo.
Okay.
or like when you're happy about something and you want to just like, you know, affirm, mm-hmm. you're like Ayi Bobo.
Yeah.
Like it's said a lot in ceremonies in temple. And I think, there's different terms, but I mean, to go deeper, mm-hmm. in different nations is what we call it. Like Rada is a certain category of loi.
Okay.
And for them, we say Ayi Bobo. Whereas like Petro, which is a different group and mm-hmm. a different energy, it's like more fiery and mm-hmm. spread. They say Bilolo, like, so it's like Bilolo is the equivalent of Ayi Bobo.
Okay.
But Ayi Bobo is like the most common outcry that you'll hear. So
okay.
it's basically like a celebratory term to just like exclaim or affirm something.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wanted to just kind of get that out there because I know that a lot of people, we've been seeing it a lot mm-hmm. more, I would say. I feel like I've been exposed to the phrase a lot more within the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I definitely wanted to kind of like address it, like, well, you know, what is that? You know, mm-hmm. I know people have been curious as to what that is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I've definitely been seeing a lot more of it. And I think people are starting to, like, I've been to a lot of events, especially in Brooklyn, where there's raga bands now. Like,
yeah.
I'll go to an event, they're like, oh, there's a raga band here. And
yeah.
I was like, oh, a lot of political events, you know, especially when the Haitians are involved, there's mm-hmm. a raga band. So I feel like it's definitely making its way, like, to be more of a staple within our mm-hmm. communities, even if it's not like the religion, or not the religion, but the way of life mm-hmm. in and of itself, but at least pieces of it, like the music, at least I think is getting more play.
Yes.
As opposed to before.
Yeah.
I never would have heard like a raga band at a Haitian event.
Yes. I do agree that they are immersing themselves more into the culture in that mm-hmm. way. And I think that's a great start.
Yeah.
You know, I think I've seen a couple weddings recently where they had raga coming in at the end, and that's, you know, at the end of a procession, like the raga is what, you know, sort of like brings it home.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that connection is important for us to acknowledge, like how we feel when we hear those rhythms.
Yeah.
When we hear those, like, you know, the drums and the horns, like all of that speaks to mm-hmm. our spirit. That's why we get so
happy,
you know,
when we
so
hear
happy.
It.
So I'm happy to see those sort of immersions mm-hmm. Happening.
It's almost as equivalent when you mentioned the wedding part. Like, I've been to several Nigerian weddings mm-hmm. and the families come out
yes.
to, like, you know, music, whether it be drums or mm-hmm. whether it be like a particular like song.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like a certain cadence to it, and like the entire, you know, both families come out to their separate beats or their separate rhythms. And it happens to every, it happens in every traditional Nigerian wedding I've ever been to. Yeah. So it's interesting to see that connection.
I love that they have like two ceremonies, you know, for the different cultures.
Yeah.
I think it's so beautiful that they honor and celebrate their culture so strongly.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful. I love it. I wish we had something like that that we could turn to. But like I said, we don't really know like a voodoo wedding. What does that look like? Yeah. What does that entail? Like what elements should be involved to have that? So I think Gaga is a good place to start.
Good place to start. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's interesting when you know, just going back to when you were describing your wedding, how you were like, that's like not like a voodoo wedding. It was your creation. Like, you know, you put it together in the way that you saw fit. But a lot of people who saw it were like, oh, that's a voodoo wedding. I never knew what a voodoo wedding looked like. And so now we know.
It was a personal creation.
Yeah. So for everybody that was wondering, that is not a voodoo wedding.
It had voodoo elements
exactly. But that is not what you would see like in Haiti, right? Like if you went to
like a voodoo inspired wedding.
Yeah.
Because I've never witnessed anything like that in Haiti. And like I said, they have mariage loi. And I think there were some comments that I saw alluding to the fact that I was marrying a spirit.
Oh.
Like the scene where
it
video,
was like a movie.
The video where I'm walking down the aisle, you know, you don't see Movilino, you don't see my husband.
Yeah, I didn't see
end.
Him.
So it's just me. And so a lot of people were saying like, like, you know, that I was marrying the devil or marrying some entity.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so interesting because, like, the part of the movie that you're watching or the scene that you're watching can be interpreted in so many different ways.
Yep.
So the fact that many people just saw that part, it was easy for them to misinterpret what was really happening. And then all they need to hear is drums and like some loi name mentioned in the song for them to be like, woy, ki bagay sa?
Yeah.
What is happening? If you don't see danse, don't see yonvalu, and forget it. So it was...
it was very interesting. Yeah, interesting. I definitely saw, and that's one thing that I didn't really get to touch on, but I think we did in other aspects, is the fact that voodoo is equated to devil worship, right? And that's the other negative part that we see. And I think that's one of the big ones that I hear, at least within like, you know, the Christian community, is that, oh, sasi bagay satanik, sasi bagay jab, right? But again, and just going back to some of the elements of, you know, just nature and the different things, like nothing of what we've talked about, you know, relates to, I guess, the devil. But I guess my question is, within, I guess, the voodoo way of life, is there a belief in a devil? Like, I know in certain religions, certain beliefs, there's not really like a devil in a sense, right? So I guess... is when somebody says, well, this is devil worship, is there even a devil within like the voodoo way of life?
No. We have many spirits, many loi, many entities, and some of them are light and sweet, and some of them are ferocious.
Okay.
You know? So I think that, like I said earlier, that there is a negative aspect to it, of course, but as there is in everything, like in nature, like, yeah, there's rain, but then there's also like tsunamis and storms and lightning and dangerous parts of nature. So I think that all of that is relative, you know, in the same way in Christianity, there's, you know, there's good, but there's a lot of negative happening maybe behind closed doors that we don't want to focus on or really acknowledge or talk about. But it's not devil worship. I think that people can use it the way that they see fit. And there have been a lot of people who have used it negatively to do harm. But that's just because it's so powerful that, you know, you can use it for good, for great, or you can use it, you know, for bad. And I think that just comes from a lack of understanding or education, sort of like an ignorance.
Yeah.
Because it's not, no one is worshiping the devil per se. And yeah, there's no devil. Like, it's like there's just a bunch. But it's funny because many Vaudouisans who I've spoken to believe in like a bon Dieu and a Satan. But I don't personally prescribe to that. I don't see that at all. I just see many spirits. And some of them, you know, they all have their different characteristics and their own temperatures and their own traits.
Okay.
So, gen bon, gen ki pa bon.
Just like in everything.
Just like in everything. Exactly. Okay. In life.
All right. Well, I think this was a very
in-depth
discussion. Very informative. I think at least gave the people a little bit of a glimpse as to, because like you said, it's easy, but it's complicated, right? There's many levels to it. So I think though, at least, you know, there is some sort of glimpse into the world of like voodoo, like what it is, you know, what it's really about, what it's not. And that there is a movement. There is a movement going on to go back to your roots.
And I think it's really a personal journey. I think that no one person can give you all of the answers that you have about voodoo. And I feel that like people are so excited that they just like have all these questions and they just think that like they can ask one voodooisant and they'll find all the answers.
Yeah.
But like the answers can be very individual to you. And that's why I don't like to refer any one book, because it depends on how that information, how you are able to receive it, or what really resonates with you. And also to question a lot of the things that we're reading, because who is really writing a lot of these books? You know, it's a lot of people from the international community who go to Haiti to research it and understand it. And then they sort of feed us this information based on their own lens.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, also something that's a little bit tricky. So I think that, yes, this is a good beginning. For people who want to learn. But I think that there's a lot of, it's like a self-discovery and really finding out like what it means to you and how, in what way. Because if you think about it, like we're all spirits in our own ways and we all have our own characteristics, traits, and temperatures. You know, we have our own way. So something that may catch my eye or catch my attention may not, you know, speak to you in the same way. So we're all, you know, we are our own individual colors sort of walking around. So mpasi.
Okay. Yeah. And I think that's right. I think a lot of times people want to hone in on somebody else's experience, like, okay, this is working for you, it looks like, so I want to do exactly what you did. And that's not, when it comes to the matters of like the heart, the spirits, like that's not, like you said, that's not,
there's so many factors that play into that. Your upbringing, your birth time, your birth, like all of these things, like there's not one recipe or prescription that works, I think, for each individual. But I think that voodoo is something that resonates with most Haitians if they want to admit it. And I think it's worth sort of understanding why and what that is.
And exploring it to some sort of extent. Now, outside of this, you know, wonderful show that we put together here, you know, I know that you don't want to recommend any particular book, but for somebody who truly is interested in at least reading up and just getting a little more acclimated, not necessarily making a decision, but I kind of want to know a little bit more about this. You know, the internet's very dangerous. You know, if you go out there blindly to search things like this, right? Where would be the best place for them to gather some materials if they live in Brooklyn? Like, is there a particular like center? I don't know.
Not that I would feel confident recommending.
Okay.
Again, you know, because there are plenty of there are plenty of priests and priestesses in our communities. I don't, you know, this is also a tough part of it because many Vaudouisans don't necessarily want to be sharing all that information with an outsider who's just here, just like, who's just curious, which is, I stand on the other side of that. You know, I'm like, let's all figure this out and get the answers and learn.
Yeah.
But it can be very taboo when you try to get certain information, because they'll just give you a little, you don't really have the full, it's that's cultural. That's part of the way that they were brought up to sort of approach it. I think, yes, the internet is a great resource, although it can be dangerous because many things are incorrect on there. But many things are correct as well. Someone shared something with me recently on online that was like Université Vaudou or something. Oh. I haven't seen the information, but I think that that's a great platform that will maybe be built upon over time. A few people sent it to me like, oh, finally, like a place where we can go if we have any answers. You know, maybe people are afraid to seek out the answers publicly and they want to do it in the comfort of their own home. You know, like by sort of getting so I think I go to the internet sometimes, but then Movolino, my husband, who grew up more so in that way of life with his family, he has answers that the internet won't have, and he'll be able to immediately identify like, no, ça pas fait sens, moun ça a pali pile bagay ki pa, you know, ki pa bon, ki pa. So it can be confusing. I just found a book recently with some really great veves in it by Milo Rigaud. It's called Veve, or like Le Veve du Vaudou Haïtien. And it has a short amount of text sort of in the beginning, but then throughout the rest of the book, it's all just like images of the veves and all of the variations of each, because we tend to see like the same ones over and over again. So that was a very resourceful space to find like some information. Although I can't say that everything at the beginning of the book is that I don't agree with some of the things, some of the information, but the veves are a great resource.
All right. Well, for those of you who are on your spiritual journey, who may be, you know, looking for more information, Riva has mentioned this university of Vaudou. There, online, you know, the internet. Be careful with the internet. But the internet is, I mean, at the end of the day, it is a great source. I mean, I Google everything. So I Google everything. You just got to be, you know, you just got to have a little more discernment, I think, when it comes to the spirit
and
world.
And don't just click on the first thing, go through quite a few links.
And then compare. All right. Well, this was definitely really great, I think. I always like follow-up. So I feel like at some point there will be like a follow-up. But I really, really appreciated you coming on the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And just to, I guess, tap slightly on music.
I want to get into that. It's like, what are we doing next?
I'm working on a children's lullaby album.
I love exclusives. Give me all the exclusives.
It's gonna be short and sweet, but I really want to tap into children's lullabies. We have so many beautiful songs that are sort of, you know, lost in the narrative somewhere. Like Mata Jean-Claude had some really beautiful songs that she did, but you can't access her music now. It's like really difficult. They're only on vinyls, or like there's only one or two albums on iTunes. Like nothing on Spotify. Like I've done quite a bit of research. Like, where is this? Where are these gems?
They're not here.
They're not here. So I feel after I had my daughter, Loa, I felt like I wanted to put something together for her also to sort of teach her some of the, and then I sing them to her at night. Regardless.
I've seen some videos in the past that you posted of you singing.
When she was younger. Now she's like very talkative, so she'll, you know, talk through. But when it's bedtime, she simmers down and falls asleep to the song. So I want to give other, not just Haitian mothers, but other mothers the opportunity to sort of familiarize themselves with that repertoire. So working on that, hopefully that'll be ready soon. It's not going to be like a full album, like sort of like an EP length. But I'm very excited about that.
What about Bohio music?
Yeah, Bohio music.
I love Bohio music. I totally love the band.
Thank you. Bohio is working on a project that is more stripped down than the last one. The last one was very you know, electronic heavy. A little differently produced. Like the production was very different from like Belle de Culture, like the first album that Movolino produced. But now we want to sort of explore, like, stripping down the music and not necessarily acoustic, but sort of closer approaching that direction.
Okay.
So because we have a lot of stuff online that people really love, like that Al Green song that mm-hmm. we did in Creole when we first met, and he's like playing the guitar and I'm just singing
I
with
think
him.
I remember you posting something
yeah
about
it
this.
Was
yeah.
Very it's a little early while ago. On yeah like 2013
a while ago
12,
yeah
something like that. It's an old one, but people always come back to that. People are always like, "Pukisano pa, you know, fun album con ça," mm-hmm. where it's just like all the feels and more focusing on the acoustic
yeah.
side of it. So we want to listen to the people and do some work in that direction. So that's what, I mean, not to say it's going to be a full acoustic album, but there's going to be more. Like also, for example, the last album that we did, Aiti na Kaila, mm-hmm. We created all these songs. And then at the last minute, Movilino came up with like, 3 or 4 slower songs just to balance things out because
okay.
it was so like wah, wah, mm-hmm. wah. And Crié was one of the ones that he created in a day, just like off the top of his head. I think he created 2 songs at once, something crazy. But that song has been the most played mm-hmm. and the most shared, the most commented on. Like people come back to that song all the time. And it's a simple song.
Yeah.
And we just did it as a filler, just to fill out the space. So that says a lot. That says, like, people are really looking for that.
That's
like,
soulful.
That soulful, mm-hmm. like, you know, connection. Because the music, you know, when it's upbeat and exciting and celebratory, it's fun. But really to get to the core of it,
yeah.
you have to kind of
slow it down a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what we're sort of working on right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what about any solo Riva Priscille, mm-hmm. you know, music? Are
yeah,
we going to get any solo?
Yeah. I have a few more of those in me. they're in the works right now. Like I said, The Lullaby album will be the first. That's mm-hmm. at the top of my list.
But for the adults.
I'm working on, I haven't started working on it yet, but my next sort of concept is to also strip down the music and get more ceremonial.
Okay. Okay.
So I want to do that.
Okay.
Not Azo as a reference.
Okay.
But kind of.
Hmm.
You know? Like, more incantations mm-hmm. than songs.
Okay.
More, like, ritual.
I think that would be interesting.
I think so,
I think it would be very interesting.
Yeah. I haven't fully developed this thought. I'm just sharing. This is an exclusive.
This is an exclusive. We know we love the exclusives.
No one has this information but my husband and my, you know, my notebook. But but I definitely want to do some more of that. And it's an interesting balance because, like I said, my husband always wants to sort of get more experimental and go, you know, broaden the horizon. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, let's go back.
Let's
go deeper into this. Let's go back. Yeah, So we're, you know, flowing and supporting one another and finding a way to interweave all of these ideas. Because mm-hmm. we're both artists, so we
yeah.
always have like these bubbling ideas and mm-hmm. exciting things that we want to apply. But then it's also like finding the time to roll these things
yeah,
out.
Yeah, the execution.
And when makes more sense, exactly. So over time, we have those 3 projects that are all in the works right now.
Yes.
So it's just putting them all to play.
All right. Well, we know it's going to happen, mm-hmm. of course.
Yes,
I actually
yes.
am excited about the lullabies because yeah. I love
just
children's
like
lullabies.
Like it's just like
yeah. I love these. I need to be put to sleep. You know what I mean?
Yeah, me too.
I'm tired of like Fuego Jacker.
And exactly. And that's not even our song.
It's not.
And there's so many international albums that focus on lullaby music, mm-hmm. but we don't really have many Haitian stuff.
No.
I mean, there's a couple of songs that are on like compilation albums that I've heard.
Yeah.
But I feel that our community is underserved in that sense. Yeah.
All right.
But thank you so much for having me. I'm happy we got to do this.
Finally. I'm really excited about, you know, the world hearing this this episode. But I definitely am going to do follow-ups now that I know that there's some things in the making.
Yeah,
I'm going to bring you back to talk about, you know, once they've been released and everybody's had them and enjoyed them to talk about, you know, the feedback at that point.
Absolutely.
But that I'm really happy about this show. I think that it's going to open the eyes of a lot of people. And so that's the point. That's the point of the show, right?
Absolutely.
To kind of tap into things that people don't normally want to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. So, thank you for the work that you're doing, you know, for
thank
our community
you.
Because we need more,
you know,
more of you.
Trying. Yeah. I'm out here.
Yes.
All right, everyone. Well, that is a wrap for this episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. And I will talk to you guys next week.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Sunday.
I can't wait to come back.
7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
It's all online.